This is Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy, the art of attracting, acquiring, and retaining talent. Here's Kathleen.
My guest this week is Dr. Allison Gabriel, the McClellan Professor of Management and Organizations and University Distinguished Scholar in the Eller College of Management at the University of Arizona. Ellie's research focuses on emotions at work, employee recovery and well-being, interpersonal processes, and motivation. Allie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's been interesting learning about your background. You're an organizational psychologist by training, and you study employee well-being. And I'm always curious to know, how did you get interested in this subject?
Yeah, so I actually became interested in this when I was in high school, working a lot of part-time jobs in the service industry. The service industry is just rife with emotional demands and emotional labor. And I remember going into all these jobs thinking, you know, I'm a people person, so being a hostess or a waitress sometimes or working in retail, this suits me, right? Like, this suits my personality. But I would still come home feeling incredibly fatigued and burned out just from interacting with people. And that always really puzzled me. And then when I got to Penn State University, where I did my undergraduate work, I met Alicia Grandy, who was a professor there that taught a seminar I took my very first year called The Psychology of Service with a Smile. And it was all about emotional labor and the service industry and how these norms we create that really regulate, you know, how we interact with each other, how we regulate our emotions, how burdensome those processes could be. And I was just hooked. I was hooked from there. I started doing research with her. I went on to the University of Akron to continue to pursue my PhD on topics of emotions and emotional labor. And I just decided really early on that any project I did, one of the outcomes or a core element would be employee well-being. How can we make employees feel better and just really thrive at work?
Really interesting. And gosh, I bet that professor, there's always that question that you get asked, who is that professor that made a difference in your life, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure she's quite proud of making a difference in your life and all the work that you've been doing. So how did this transcend to working women and specifically working mothers in the workforce?
So I became a mother myself in March of 2020, March 10th of 2020. So literally the day before the world shifted was when we had our daughter. Thank you.
At least your husband was able to be in the delivery room with you.
Yeah, we had the most, in hindsight now, the luckiest experience because it was before everything changed. So we were, you know, unmasked, lots of care team, people could come visit us. We just had no idea, you know, what was swirling outside. And we were just having this very blissful moment. So very fortunate for that. So I became a mother in March of 2020. Prior to that, you know, a lot of the ways I get inspiration for my research are things that have happened to me or things that have happened to friends of people I know. And I was having more and more conversations with friends in a variety of industries, just lamenting of the challenges they faced being a working mother, whether that was how they were structuring their time between work and home, whether that was juggling kind of breastfeeding and pumping breast milk and demands and meetings and so forth. And I just, you know, as an organizational psychologist, this felt like a puzzle to me. It fit with what I wanted to study with employee well-being. And it felt like I could try to make a small difference, hopefully, in the lives of people that I knew. And when I started digging into what we know about, you know, women's health, motherhood in the workplace, we were studying a lot on pregnancy. We were studying a lot on kind of re-entry and organizational support to help women re-enter the workforce. But a lot of these other elements of motherhood are just women's health more generally. Menstruation, pregnancy, breastfeeding, menopause, those topics were absent. And that really bothered me, honestly. I felt like it was a huge miss that we were not talking about these things that are common, they are natural, and they're affecting, you know, nearly half of our workforce. And that really just motivated me to try to get into that space to start what I felt was a really important conversation.
It's a critical conversation. And, you know, as I was, you know, reading some of the different research studies that you've done, and we're going to have you talk about more of them, I kept reflecting on my own journey. And my husband and I had a difficult time starting our family. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. So, you know, multiple miscarriages, all of those kinds of things. And, you know, I think back to when I was working, and this was before I had my own company, you know, and I worked for a woman, and I remember her, you know, like, my first miscarriage was at 12 weeks, so I did have a lot of that postpartum depression. And I remember, like, just being really low, and she's like, just, you got to get back to work. And I, you know, I didn't think about it at that time, because we all were thinking we were superwomen and could just mm-hmm. do anything and just ignored those sorts of things. So when I started my company, actually, you know, I'm sort of forced to start my own company. It was the time that, you know, I wanted to figure out, how do I have a company and still be a mom? And so a year after I started my business, we adopted our son, Daniel. And of course, what happens after you adopt a child is that you get pregnant, right? So I had
naturally.
Yes. So I had two kids in 18 months and 4 days to be exact. And so that was just magical. And I was already working at home, so that wasn't an issue for us. But it was just so important that I didn't miss anything of them growing up. And I had somebody that would come in and take care of them. But what happened as my company grew, who I was attracting to join the company were other moms like me. They might have been, you know, professional recruiters in a corporation, and they had young children, and they were tired of feeding them Pop-Tarts on the way to daycare, you know, rushing to the office. And so without, I guess, you know, a consciousness, maybe that's underselling myself, but we became the work-life balance company. And that's really how we grew. And now, even today, we still maintain that, but we're finding that there are more dads who are taking an active role in the caregiving of their children, who are choosing to join our organization as well, so that they can still be there to support their wives who are working full time, but they can be there to, you know, pick up the kids at the bus stop or, you know, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. So I think it was interesting just learning about some of the things that you're doing. And I wanted, you know, to let you know a little bit about my story.
Yeah, I love and I'm so appreciative of your authentic telling, because I think a big part of what we're trying to do with our research is bring this authentic element of women's lives into the workplace. And it's not just, you know, the 9 months of pregnancy and the, you know, gosh, 6 to 12 weeks of leave that you may have access to, depending on where you are in the United States, for instance. But it's the whole motherhood journey, right? From conception all the way out to that whole first year postpartum, if we really want to talk about motherhood really holistically. So I'm personally appreciative that you're talking about your story so openly, because that's how I think we bring more attention to this, is talking about it and talking about struggles and normalizing that as much as possible.
Yeah. And you know, you talk about the other issues that come into play, especially, you know, the menopause. So I'm on the other end of the spectrum. And so there's crazy things that happen. But I also think that, you know, the caregiving of family members, and of course the pandemic has certainly elevated that aspect of it as well. But, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about with you is, you know, even before the pandemic and this She Session started, right? Employers really needed to focus on figuring out what they should do to improve their internal programs to make sure that they retain and support women. And I do a lot of work with women on boards, so it's around gender parity. But we don't really, doesn't really get around the working mom, especially the young working mom. And so as I've been learning more about the work that you've been doing, I've started asking some of the people that I know, some of the company leaders, if they have internal programs to support working moms, and especially as it relates to their reentry after childbirth. And it's been really fascinating. I should document this so you can have it in your research study. But yeah, you know, I think more companies are starting to ingrain that work-life balance into their culture, but overwhelmingly, leaders are clueless to this. And I think sometimes, even women leaders, and I think sometimes that's where we've been our worst enemy, right? I was thinking about, and I think it was the woman that was the CEO of Yahoo, right? Who mm-hmm. had a baby And it was like a badge of honor that she was back into the office 6 days later. And we're like, well, why? You know,
right. I mean,
we should be building our team so that they can support us so we can do what we need to do, which is care for our children and loved ones.
Right. And not viewing that as the way it has to be, right? So we've done work on breastfeeding, and we're currently doing work on postpartum depression, which I can talk about why we're doing that, and also postpartum allyship, and that's really tied to how we welcome women back. And across that research, a really common theme is I needed autonomy, right, in how I was going to reenter work. So for some women, you know, they were really wanting to kind of reclaim that part of their work identity. They really wanted to come back faster than they were allowed, and that suited them, right? It suited their well-being. They had care structures in place that allowed them to do that. For other women, they were like, I didn't want that. And it was, you know, triggering and troubling to feel pressure to come back so quickly or go from completely on leave to all in overnight. And I think that's a really important discussion that smart organizations are going to start having, which is, here's what we think leave has to be or what we have to offer. But can we reimagine that in a way that women want to use it and they use it in a way that serves them? And that can go for fathers too, right? And as you said, we're seeing more and more men involved in caregiving. For us, part of the reason I'm able to still do my job the way I want to do it is because my husband elected to go part-time after we had Eleanor. And that was crucial, right? And that's the dynamic that makes sense for us. But that dynamic might not make sense for everybody. And so I think organizational leaders, the more they can talk to people and say, hey, you know, we have this blanket policy, but can we use it more creatively? Or what would work for you? Or do you want to hear about work while you're on leave and just these little touch points to keep your agency going with the company? All of those conversations, I think, can just be really, really fruitful, particularly at this turning point we're at right now, as we're trying to reimagine and rethink what the future of work is really going to be for many people.
So is there anybody out there doing it right?
That's a good question. I think there are companies that are starting to do this right. You know, the women we've talked to, the really adaptive companies were doing exactly what I said. They were listening, right? They were checking in, having these touch points, seeing where women were in their postpartum experience, and giving them options of, you know, why don't you come back part-time, or do you want to start remote, or just start a couple of days and you tell us if that's working for you. And if it's not, let's readjust that. You know, I'm hoping that one thing, you know, that it's hard for me to talk about the pandemic optimistically because it really shadowed the year of my first year of motherhood in a pretty significant way. But I'm hopeful that something we've learned is that we can be really adaptive with our work structures. We can be really flexible. And performance doesn't have to suffer. And in fact, it can do the opposite. It can make people more productive because they're crafting work in a way that suits them and their families and their well-being. And so it's these companies that we talked to with women where they were having these conversations and having them often and making it this two-way street of, here's what the policy could be, but let's reimagine it together, right? Like, let's think flexibly about that. And any company can do that, right? Any manager can do that and sit down with their employees and not be scared or shy away from these conversations that can still feel in many ways really, really kind of taboo and stigmatized. You know, I'm really hoping we can continue to break that down.
Yeah, me too. So Eleanor came March 10th, 2020. Mm-hmm. University of Arizona closed down March 13th. Mm-hmm. How was your reentry back to the university? I mean, you're a working mom now, but you're also dealing with the anxiety of these that the students are going through.
Right. It was really hard. And I want to be clear that it wasn't hard because of anything the University of Arizona did, or so I work in the Department of Management and Organizations at Eller, at their the Eller College of Management, and I felt incredibly supported. So many of the things that I described to you that would be ideals were happening to me. I had senior colleagues checking in with me, asking how I was, seeing what I was doing, giving me these kind of touch points of information. I was, you know, emailing pictures of Eleanor to my dean, right? Because he wanted to see her. And so I was incredibly supported and yet absolutely crippled at the same time with postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression. So much so that it was honestly debilitating on and off until Eleanor was about 14 or 15 months. And some of my colleagues knew that at the university. And that was just really striking to me that here I was in what was objectively a very supportive department. And I could tell you, and I'm telling you right now, that I felt supported. I had support at home between Mike and my, we're very fortunate that my parents live here in Tucson. And yet, it was hard for me to get out of bed some days. It was hard for me to think clearly. And that really, for me, ignited me to keep studying these issues and to start tackling issues like postpartum depression and to talk to other women and say, you know, how did you pull yourself out of this? And if we think about possible bright sides or ways that this has recrafted your life, what does that look like for you? And so, you know, luckily we're, you know, she just turned two last month. We're in a much better place. I'm in a much better place. The world is hopefully in a much better place.
That's called the terrible twos, Allie.
I know. Although she's pretty, you know, it's not too terrible yet. Maybe that's a bright side of having postpartum depression is after that, things feel manageable and you're like, okay, I can do this. But you know, it really, what's been interesting for me now is that my research on these topics is like my own very public diary, because the stories that we're telling are partly about, it's me, right? I hear myself with these women talking about postpartum depression. I hear myself in the women telling us, it's this brilliant project being led by Nitya Chavla right now at Texas A&M about allyship and acts of kindness and support and compassion of how we welcome women back to work. And so, you know, my experience, as hard as it was, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody, I'm hopeful that I can channel that to continue to make things better for other working mothers, particularly working mothers in academia. We have, we have, I think, the best job in the world, but it's still so demanding and so hard to make it all fit. And that's kind of the question I'm asking myself now is, how do I help other women make this all fit? And what does that look like for them?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what, you know, we see this in the media, right? And that there are more women talking about postpartum depression and just mental health issues in general. And so the more that, that we talk about it, the more that it does become a conversation. And I think for you at the university, you've got a variety of age groups that, that you interface with in generations. And so for them to be able to see what you're walking, you know, you're walking the talk here, that's going to somehow get into their little brains and will make an impact on them down the road. I'm positive.
I hope so. Yeah.
I can assure you. So, as I've already been talking to my friends at the U of A that are very well aware of the work that you are doing. So, and you're highly, highly well respected down there.
Oh, thank you.
So let's talk about some of the research that you're doing. I'm particularly interested. You shared, I think it's, is it the Ovia Asks podcast that you were on recently? And you were talking about the return to work study and the findings on that. Can you give us an overview of that study?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I need to first give a shout out to my brilliant co-authors on this. So it's Jamie Ladge, Laura Little, Rebecca McGowan, and Ellie Stillwell. And this project, as I just mentioned, was really born out of my own personal struggles that I had. So I was really deep into the throes of PPD and just finding a hard way of pulling myself out of that. And I, again, I was really fortunate here. So I was able to take, you know, 12 weeks of paid leave, and then blessed by an academic schedule and having a baby at the right time, I then went immediately into summer break. So my leave kind of extended as long as I wanted it to, since summer's naturally slower. And so I found myself kind of really stuck with these feelings of PPD. And it was around the 5-month mark or so that I was offered an opportunity by Lillian Eby to be an associate editor at Journal of Applied Psychology, which is for organizational psychologists, that is like the mecca of journals. Like it is like the journal that you're like, oh my gosh, you know, if this is, and I told my doctoral advisor, we had had lots of career conversations. And I was like, if JAP ever calls, I don't know if I'll ever be able to say no. And then they called. And I remember talking to Mike about it, my husband, and I was like, can I do this? Like I'm 5 months out. I can barely get out of bed some days. And we had this conversation and he was like, you know, and my advisor said the same thing. Maybe this will be a way out, right? Like maybe this will help you recraft and like reclaim a big part of yourself. And I was like, that's so interesting. Like, could it be that the reprioritization of work in some ways could help me solve my struggles returning to work and trying to find myself again? And so I kept thinking about this for weeks, and I was friends with Jamie and Laura. I was mildly obsessed with their work on motherhood, and I just cold emailed them saying, hey, I have this idea about PPD and what it means to the return to work. I know you're both busy. Do you have any interest? And they both wrote back immediately, like, yes, let's talk about this. And so we developed this partnership, thanks to Laura, with Ovia Health, who's been very supportive. It's been a fun full circle because like I used their app when I was pregnant, so I knew if Eleanor was the size of like a pineapple 1 week, you know, it's one of those apps that tells you how big your baby is. And then in the postpartum period, it flips to being a support app. And so that's kind of the side of the house that we're working with. And we were able to recruit 41 women to tell us their stories with PPD and how it affected them in terms of, you know, how the symptoms affected them, how their diagnosis affected them, and how that then transpired into the ways they recrafted their work and family narrative. So what it meant to be a mother, to be an employee. And what's really fascinating is that although, and I don't want to sugarcoat it, PPD is obviously dire, right? If it's not treated, if it's not diagnosed, the outcomes can be severe for women. It affects, you know, the health of the baby, it affects family dynamics and so forth. But for a lot of women, having that diagnosis was like a light bulb aha moment of, wait a second, like I don't have to feel this way. I can get treatment and I can develop coping and resilience and kind of ways to rethink my experience that are finally going to make me enact, you know, self-compassion, right? Take care of myself, be kind to myself, not beat myself up over the fact that, you know, my child does not have a Instagram worthy playroom, right? All giving grace in a variety of ways. But then it also affected the way they came back to work. And so for some women, it was enacting better boundaries, right? Of being like, you know what? I'm not responding to emails after hours, or I'm not working on weekends. Some women changed jobs, and not just, you know, similar job, different company, but like changed industries. We had one woman who left her job to go into the mental health industry and to work for an organization that supported mental health. We saw women realizing that they could be these positive beacons of compassion for others. So to a point you made of talking not only about their other struggles, but reaching out and helping support other new moms or people who were going through really difficult mental health crises of their own. And so it's interesting to me because we talk about mental health and we talk about PPD as this thing that needs to be kind of segmented out of work, right? That we need to hide this aspect of ourselves. But for a lot of the women we talked to, and myself included, it in some ways became one of their greatest strengths that they could talk about this and use it in a way that really proactively shaped the ways that they thought about work. And so it's a project. I'm just really, really proud of it. It's my current research baby. I'm very excited about it and just grateful that, you know, I'm here to talk to you about it today and that Ovia has supported us in this endeavor.
Well, you know, and I'm so grateful that you're doing it because, again, in my company journey, we've already had our children. And so we've raised them. So we're going through, you know, that piece of it. But now the company is growing, and I am hiring new college grads. I am hiring folks that have been out of school for, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 years, which for me was unheard of in the past. And so now I have to start thinking about different things because as they're starting to get married, I know that there are going to be children at some point. Whether that's a year from now or 5 years from now, it doesn't really matter. But I've had to change my whole benefits structure to incorporate that population that I never had before. So everybody is going to have a postpartum experience like I did, which was pure chaos. But I didn't have the PPD, thank God. But, you know, hearing your story, I'm like, I have to be prepared for just about anything because you don't know. So I think as employers, we just have to stay open to these sorts of things. And I guess the other thing is, and you said it a little bit earlier, it's really, we've just got to ask people what they need.
Right.
Instead of assuming.
Right. And I think, like I said, I was very, very fortunate here that I happened to work with people who have become, you know, my best friends inside and outside of work. And that was one of the best things. One of my colleagues here, I remember he would call me quite frequently to check in or just even text. And that was something he would always say. It would just be, you know, thank you for telling me this. What can I do? Like, let me, like, don't tell me, I'm not going to tell you what I think you need. Like, tell me what you think you need right now. And, and sometimes that would be as simple as me saying, you know, I don't really know, but just asking that feels good right now. And other times it's been much more clear of like, you know what I really need is to not be involved in X, right? Like, I need to remove myself from this, or I need to step back from this role to reinvest myself in this other one. Is that possible? Because I think, like I said, there's this misconception that we go on parental leave for 12 weeks max, which is just way too short. We're very lucky at Arizona. They actually just revised our parental leave policy where now the university pays 12 weeks paid leave, and then you can take another 12 weeks paid or unpaid, depending on your amount of sick leave you have. And it's wonderful. I'm so glad that the university did that. But we have this idea that you go on leave for 12 weeks and then you come back and you're just like back. And so rarely is that the case, right? And so what was helpful for me is that, you know, even when I was back, colleagues were still just checking in on me saying, I know you're back, but how is the pacing for you? What can we do to help you out? So yeah, there's just so many conversations to have, and not just view having a baby as, oh, you had a baby, oh, you had parental leave, okay, now you're back, and then kind of moving on like it never happened, when in reality, even if you have a easy pregnancy and perfect birth and no complications postpartum, your life will never be the same no matter what. And I think we need to acknowledge that more.
Yeah, definitely. Those crazy things called hormones that go through your body, just they're like an alien.
Yeah, well, I remember just being like, oh my gosh, I have to go back to work. I have PPD and postpartum anxiety, and my hair is falling out. Nobody told me that was going to happen, or, you know, clothes just don't feel good. It's all these little things that just add up and make the return to work feel bad, when we could be doing more things proactively to help women feel better. And something I have always said, and that I hope my research is doing this, is that I feel like it's high time that we design workplaces and workspaces to work with women's bodies as opposed to against them. And it's all these little things that will start to add up to really revolutionize how we support women at work really, really holistically.
Yeah. Well, it's tough when we see the media and they're, you know, here we are 6 weeks later and they're back in evening gowns on, you know, walking the runway.
That was not me. My athleisure wardrobe from all this is exceptional now. There's just no way. There's no way that I can do this. And thank goodness for remote work, because I could hide that side of that struggle for a while. But yeah, it's just all these little things. And what's fascinating is that when I had a baby for the first time, I would tell my friends, like, you know, my hair's falling out. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, of course. And I'm like, what do you mean, of course? Like, where was the book on that, right? And it's all these little things that we just don't talk about, and we just have to power through. And gosh, like, what a drain on our cognitive resources and emotional resources and physical resources to kind of have to keep grappling with that all during the return to work, when everything is just kind of all over the place on a good day.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, hang on, Allie, we've got to stop here. But coming up in the second part of my conversation with Professor Allison Gabriel from the University of Arizona's Eller College of Management, Allie shares the results of her study on Zoom fatigue.
Those feelings of fatigue hindered employees' engagement in the meetings and their self-reported feelings of voice in those meetings. So the irony was quickly not lost on us that the very thing that cameras are supposed to promote, which is being more engaged and feeling like you can speak up, was inadvertently getting hit because employees were so fatigued from being on camera.
This has been Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy. To connect with Kathleen or to learn more about recruitment research, go to duffygroup.com.